I just wanted to start by asking you about your meeting with the Holy Father this morning. Pope Francis is a huge ally in the fight for peace and for the defense of human rights. So is there anything that you wanted to raise with him?
Well, it was a great honor to meet with the Holy Father this morning, and we had a very important conversation about making sure that the world realizes again that there is the right to peace. And we talked a lot about the current conflict situations around the world and how important it is to come back to senses and to the fulfillment of the right to peace. But we also discussed the dangers of artificial intelligence, for example. We have in 60 countries elections this year. We know when you have social media platforms and generative artificial intelligence combined, that this could actually have a negative impact on the democratic space, because you will have spreading of false news, fake news, of disinformation, of hate speech, and it's really important to counter that. And we discussed more generally, you know, the challenges of geopolitics and what geopolitics means for human dignity and human rights and human agency. And indeed, the Holy Father is a very strong symbol, and not just symbol, he is a very strong champion of the human rights cause in the world.
You mentioned, of course, artificial intelligence, the year 2024, and currently there are countless numbers of conflicts with disturbing amounts of victims, and of course any victim is a disturbing amount, but all these wars being fought with modern technology in a year in which the talk of the defense of human rights is so massive, it doesn't make sense. How can you explain that?
Well, we are in a strange period of the world. I mean, sometimes when I think of the world today, I think of Antonio Gramsci. There's a very famous quote. Maybe I'll stop. So when I look at the world today, I think of a very famous quote by Antonio Gramsci. The old has not yet died, the new is not yet born, and in between is a monster. And we live through this monster period. But we already see also the beginnings of a better world, of a world that is fundamentally based on human rights, that is also fundamentally based on the respect for human dignity. But it is true, we see paradoxical situations. We see wars that go back to 19th century thinking. I mean, if you look at Ukraine, the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, for example. If you look at what's happening in the Middle East at the moment. Unfortunately, if it's combined with technology, the ability to do harm is multiplied, because you also take away human agency. And that's, you know, we have a very clear position on lethal autonomous weapons, that lethal autonomous weapons are absolutely contrary to human rights law, and they should not be used. They should be forbidden. And so the world needs to wake up to these dangers, but also find back to the fundamental principles and values of the UN Charter, of the United Nations Charter, and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, because that was a promise for the world, for people in the world. And sometimes I wish that the political and economic elites in the world would understand both the history of it, but also go back to the roots and the basics of what needs to be the consensus in societies.
You said the world needs to wake up. Who's the world?
That's a very good question. I think it really speaks to the leadership, because at the end of the day, and that's why I was saying political and economic elites, because we know they have enormous influence. I mean, if you look at B-tech companies, I'm going to travel to the West Coast to engage with B-tech, with the technology, come with big technology companies around the world, because we need to have a conversation with them about human rights, the human rights guardrails that we need in order to make sure that, you know, the very important digital developments do not have a negative impact on human rights of people. But I'm also encouraged by young people. I see an enormous appetite for human rights, for change, for climate, to address the climate change issue. And that gives me a lot of hope. which is why I say, you know, there is also something that we can work with and work towards, and we need to strengthen those who want to see a better world.
What do you think are some of the biggest cases of violations of human rights that we're living at the moment? You mentioned the Middle East, you mentioned Ukraine, but you also mentioned the climate crisis.
Yeah, I think, of course, what we see today when it comes to war, and we have over 50 situations where you have a violent conflict, we have situations like Haiti where you also have gang warfare. There we see the biggest and most atrocious violations. There's absolutely no doubt. I mean, one of the recent examples, because we often talk about the Middle East and we talk about Ukraine, but look at Sudan, for example. Look at Myanmar. I mean, it's almost no longer in the news. Look at Syria. And what worries me is that within conflict and violence, there is an inherent dehumanization of the other, and the long-term consequences of war are terrible. It is intergenerational, and we need to find a way to come back to, first of all, international law, international humanitarian law. There are rules that apply in war. Unfortunately, they are not respected in the way that they should, but also international human rights law. And we need to constantly insist on the normative framework that needs to be put in place.
Speaking of conflicts such as Haiti and the so-called almost forgotten conflicts like Sudan and Myanmar, you say that this is where the biggest violations, the most horrific violations of human rights occur. Can violations of human rights be, so to say, categorized or ranked? Are we more afraid of rape as an instrument of war, or are we more afraid of hunger and the deprivation of access to clean water?
I mean, you know, when it comes to human rights violations, we don't want human rights violations to occur in any case. I mean, that is very clear, because they always have an harmful effect. But there are certain violations. I mean, that's why we talk about atrocity crimes, for example. We talk about crimes against humanity. We talk about war crimes. We talk about genocide. And there are very clear legal definitions attached to them. So it's clear when it comes to using rape or starvation as a method of warfare, these are very atrocious forms of human rights violations and of international legal, violations of international law, which is also why you have the International Criminal Court that looks specifically at atrocity crimes, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. So while we don't really want to speak about a hierarchy of violations, it is true that some violations have a more detrimental effect, I mean, torture, cruel, inhuman treatment of the other than perhaps others. But, I mean, of course, in my position as High Commissioner for Human Rights, we know that even smaller violations can lead to more serious ones over time. So it's always important to bear in mind that this is a slippery slope, and we need to be aware of the beginnings of that slippery slope so that we prevent them from happening.
The international community is where many of the developing nations look. They look to the international community for help, but it would seem as though faith in the international community is always fading. Help is not really being brought as much as it should. Why is that, and how can that change?
I mean, we are seeing a huge unfairness in the world today, and an inequality that has only been exacerbated during and after the pandemic. We don't talk even about the pandemic anymore, but it's important to talk about it. Because just to give you an example, most countries in the developing world have to pay more into debt repayment, so they have to do debt repayment, so they cannot invest anymore adequately in education systems and health systems. And that's a tragedy. Because if, you know, the debt restructuring is not done in such a way that you take into account the effect of the pandemic on those countries that are particularly vulnerable to it, who are already exposed so much more to climate change, for example, to all kinds of other pressures, and they basically are doing debt repayment, and they can't invest in their own future by not investing enough in education. That's a big tragedy. And we really need to call it out. And we need to make sure that there is more solidarity, but there is also more understanding about a fair international financial system that allows countries to do the right thing for their own people.
Why aren't these in place, though? Is it a matter of greed?
I wouldn't want to go into the psychology of it, but a lot has to do with domination, power dynamics, and that has a lot to do with resources. So yes, at the end of the day, business models are business models of the past. We know in order to address climate change, you have to throw away the business models of today. We know that we have to go into, you know, even consumption, methods of consumption need to be looked at differently in the future. As I said, I think we need a massive transformation of mindsets, of attitudes, of solidarity, of fostering empathy, solidarity, and compassion for other people, because that's our survival for humanity. And if we don't do it, we will face terrible consequences. And unfortunately, the ones who are often very much involved and very skillful in these power plays are the ones who will get away with it. And we should not, that shouldn't happen.
At the moment, eyes are on the situation in the Middle East, and recognizing, of course, the horrific accounts that took place on the 7th of October. Since then, you know, over 100 years or 100 days, excuse me, of war on Gaza. What can we say about this, about the violations there?
I mean, it's an unmitigated tragedy. And I mean, I think it is so important, again, to go back to the basics of respect for international law, for international humanitarian law, and for international human rights law. And what we see, of course, what the horrific attacks on the 7th of October, absolutely unacceptable, atrocious. We still have hostages in Gaza. We have also seen an incredible amount of counter-reaction by the Israeli army and by the Israeli security forces that has now led to over 25,000 killings, 70% of women and children. We have seen the denial of humanitarian assistance because it doesn't come in the way that it should. We have seen that there is a warning of starvation. I have still colleagues on the ground who tell me that they have lost their family members, and we hear that almost every day. And that's, I mean, I also find it very sad that we see the dehumanization of the other on both sides, and that's unacceptable. And we need to come back to senses. There needs to be, I mean, we need to have a ceasefire. We need to see the end of the fighting. And there are strong humanitarian reasons for it. There are strong human rights reasons for it. And I hope that those who wage this war will come to their senses, because it will otherwise also have not just terrible impact on Palestinians and Israelis, but it will also bring in the region. I mean, you see already the tensions with Lebanon, you see what's happening in the Red Sea, but also tensions in the region more broadly. And the world cannot afford yet another war that is broader than what we see today.
Moving on to a different form of violation of human rights. Yesterday in Alabama, the execution of Kenneth Smith. We'd never seen anything like this before. A new form of execution has been introduced. How big of a defeat is this? How is this possible?
It's cruel. That's clear. I've been very clear about this also from the perspective of international human rights law. Frankly, the death penalty the death penalty should not have any place in the 21st century. And it's really a call on all those states who still execute people. I mean, US, well, frankly, also Iran, we have had over 54 people executed since the beginning of the year in Iran. We have had people in Iraq executed. It's against the right to life, and it's cruel, and there's no other word for it. It shouldn't. The state should not exercise that power in that way. It's not what is appropriate in this century. And we should really overcome it. And I can only call on all those who have any influence over those who want to see this continue to occur, that they use that influence to stop this practice once and for all.